Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, this is an episode that we've been looking forward to for quite some time. And it was something that you and I had been really hyped up for. But we'll get to that in a little bit as we talk Thor, Love, and Thunder. But I have some picks this week, and some of them are going to be strange, needless to say. And
as in doctor?
Not as doctor, but they're going to be strange. And this first one is called Above Snakes, and it's from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis with art from Hayden Sherman. And it's a mini series premiere. The hit team behind The Few and Thumbs returns with an all-new Wild as Hell miniseries. Writer Sean Lewis, King Spawn, artist Hayden Sherman, Wasted Space, and rock star letterer Hassan Atsame Elual introduce a world where Deadwood-style westerns collide with the fantasia of Neil Gaiman in the story of Dirt, a man seeking vengeance for his murdered wife with nothing but a talking vulture to prod him on. Above Snakes is the fast and furious explosion of Western tropes and American vengeance that explores where our rage can take us. So, you gonna pick that one up?
Probably not. Seems kind of weird. The vulture talking. Seems a little strange. It was a very weird, like, we said, like, Deadwood and, like, meet Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that's just because of the crow that talks in Sandman versus the raven that talks in Above Snakes. And
okay,
I'm going to point something out. You just said a talking vulture is weird, yet we've recorded multiple episodes that consist of a talking raccoon, a tree-like scent being, you know, Grimace with a glove on. You know, we've talked some weird stuff in our day. And that's what tips your radar off as weird?
Well, no. I mean, yeah, we talk a lot of weird shit. But, you know, Westerns, like, I don't know. He's dying.
I guess it's so more... the vulture's like, come on, dude, you got to keep going. Yeah. Instead of saying, come on, dude, die, let me eat you. I kind of like it, but let's move on to something that I think you're probably going to pick up, and it's called Axe Eve Judgment, and that's A-X-E, not the body spray. It means Avengers, X-Men, and Eternals, and it's a big miniseries. It's a big series that's coming out from Marvel. It's X-Men versus, or the Avengers versus Eternals, and it's written by Kieran Gillen with art from Pascal Ferry, and it's first shot fired. Judgment is coming. The Eternals know that the mutants have conquered death. But what are they going to do about it? The oldest immortals on Earth eye up the newest, and the doomsday clock starts to tick toward Judgment Day. Are you a big Axe fan? You going to jump into this?
It sounds interesting. You know, have Avengers, X-Men versus the Eternals. That's seems pretty cool. So I'd probably pick it up.
And if you got the free comic book day, there was, like, the preview to it. So you got a little bit of Judgment Day right there.
Oh, the next, I do have that. See? I didn't read it yet.
You got to read it. Got to read it by this week. The next one, before I get to the last one, is also from Marvel. DC had nothing good coming out besides one-shots. This one is a new series. Well, a new series for a character that we both know and love. And that's Daredevil. Daredevil is getting a new number one. And it's written by Chip Zdarsky, who is also doing Batman. So think about that. He's doing Daredevil and Batman simultaneously. You know those stories are going to be fire. Because those tropes kind of bleed into each other's character storylines. So I'm very intrigued by this one. And then it says, after the rain comes the dawn. In the wake of Wilson Fisk's violent and visceral last act, it's a new era for New York and the Man Without Fear. With a groundbreaking creative team returning to usher in an all-new chapter, Matt Murdock has no choice but to leave behind everything he's ever known. And Elektra is the last vestige of his former life. Everything Matt Murdock thought it meant to be Daredevil is about to change, including the challenges he will have to face in the cowl. You going to pick up a new Daredevil comic?
Possibly. I haven't had a Daredevil comic in a while.
I picked up the stuff when, like, Elektra became the Daredevil, and I thought that was really neat and really cool. But this one I'm really interested in.
I picked up the new Savage Avengers where she's Daredevil, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the first one was really good. I think the third one comes out this week as well. The final one is one that I know that you're going to get. And it's Star Wars The Mandalorian. And it's
already subscribed.
Right? And it's written by our good buddy. He follows us on Instagram, Rodney Barnes, with art from George Jetney. For the first time, The Mandalorian arrives in comics. The Mandalorian bounty hunter tracks a target for a well-paying, mysterious client. Witness the introduction of Din Djarin and the first meeting between the Mandalorian and the child. I feel like this is just the Mandalorian TV show in comic form, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, and Ronnie Barnes did the Lando series.
Yes, he did Lando, Double or Nothing. He does Killadelphia, which for the last 2 years, I believe, has made it to my comics you must read list. So anything Rodney Barnes puts out is amazing. He also executive produced that Lakers show on was it Showtime,
HBO Max, I believe.
Yeah, he executive produced that, which is fantastic. So shout out him. Did my Celtics dirty in that series, but it is what it is. It's a Lakers show. But let's move into spoiler territory as we take out our pop culture passport and we stamp it on the Shadow Realm. We stamp it on a bunch of other weird planets, Omnipotence City, New Asgard, and the Bifrost, because we're going to talk about Thor: Love and Thunder, the latest installation to the MCU, the first fourth movie for any solo character, as Thor, as Chris Hemsworth is dedicated to this character of Thor. And I applaud him for doing that, because the exercise that man must have to do gives me a complex.
This is the biggest we've seen him.
I know. Like, he was enormous in this. It was like, just looking at him, I was like, Jesus, I'm never going to get sent like as big as his leg. Like, the dude was jacked. But we're not here to talk about his physique, although we could. Let's start with the Rotten Tomatoes. 67% on Rotten Tomatoes as far as the critic score, 80% as far as the audience score. Now, this is the first time in a while that a Marvel movie has come out where I've seen a lot of people divisive towards the property. And unfortunately, I feel like it usually happens with Thor. His trajectory and journey throughout the MCU from Thor 1 to Thor: Love and Thunder has been rocky. It's been peaks and valleys. Thor 1, very Shakespearean. Kenneth Branagh brings in the Arthurian lore of Thor as he goes into the Nordic realm, right? We get that. Thor: The Dark World is considered the worst MCU movie by many, although I love it. Thor: Ragnarok is hit or miss with audiences. People either loved it or they hated it. There's no real in-between. I loved it because I like Taika Waititi's brain, and I feel like in this kind of universe, it's hard to make Thor this serious god when everybody else is not so serious, right? Like, it's kind of whimsical. Yeah. There are some serious characters, so I see how they couldn't make him holier than thou, but there should have been a compromise from turning him from god to full bro. But Ragnarok was my jam, and I think that had to do with a lot of, like, the Hulk and Hela and Surtur and Fenris and Korg, specifically Korg. And then we get this one, which comes out, and this is one of the movies that I think it was, like, top 4 or 5 on our list of movies that we were hoping for. We were really looking forward to it. And before we kind of dive into the movie itself, I want to talk about the experience walking out of the movie. How did you feel when you walked out of the movie?
I had fun watching it. Like, I'm not going to say, like, oh, it was the greatest movie ever. Because the early reviews, that's what I saw.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. Like, I had fun.
Yeah.
Same way with Ragnarok. It was fun.
Yeah.
You know, Thor is one of the characters that have had a very huge change in his trajectory, because, like, if you look at all the other characters, they kind of, and all their movies are all the same.
Yeah, I think Thor's the only one who's really had this kind of midlife crisis.
Yeah, and, you know, that's because Taika Waititi, and I understand it. And, like, I loved Ragnarok. And this one was on the same plane. I don't think it was as well done. But, like, walking out of the theater, I went, okay. I didn't feel like a huge, like, oh, my God, this is the next step. Or this is, like, they're going this route. Except for that one end credit scene.
Yeah, I mean, to piggyback off of what you're saying, I walked out and said I liked it for what it was. It felt like a standalone movie. It didn't feel like a part of a larger machine. But if because it is a larger part of a larger machine, I feel like it kind of missed its mark. Did I have fun watching it? Absolutely. Did I laugh? Yes. The main thing that I was focused on was that end credit scene at the end. And I don't think it was just for the fact of, you know, Hercules showing up, because we got him name dropped pretty early in the movie. So I knew he was going to show up. The fact that I was so stoked about was that it's Brett Goldstein. And this is probably the first introduction to a lot of our listeners of Brett Goldstein, who is phenomenal on my favorite television show, Ted Lasso. He plays Roy Kent. He's a writer for the show. He's brilliant. So I was really, really excited when that popped up, because I looked at Chelsea and I was like, is that Roy? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, fuck yeah. I think I screamed it in the middle of the theater. And it was...
My wife turns around and goes, is that Bradley Cooper?
Oh, Jesus
Christ.
And
I was like, I don't think so.
He was in the movie. Bradley Cooper was in the movie for a cup of coffee. And that's where it kind of gets me a little conflicted with this movie, because going into it, I expected this to be game-changing. I expected this to be life-altering for me. We got one of my favorite comic book villains of all time, Gore the God Butcher. One of the best comic book names ever. It set up the two Thors, Odinson, Jane Foster. Great storyline. We knew what we were going to get out of that. An awesome romp with two Thors. But instead, what we got was a little bit of, like, kind of reminded me of The Boys, where the Deep is in love with the octopus, and he keeps, like, talking to the octopus and be like, no, she'll come around. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, when he's about to have a threesome with the octopus?
Yeah.
That's what it kind of reminded me of, like, between Mjolnir and Stormbreaker. Like, I thought that was a little campy for me. There was a lot of parts in this that I loved. Well, not loved. There was a lot of parts that I really liked. And then there were parts where I was like, if I were to write this, and listen, I've never been a writer of a movie. I'm just a guy who likes to watch movies and talk about them. But if I would have written this movie, I don't think I would have included the Guardians of the Galaxy, because I felt like they were wasted.
They were not needed.
Right, exactly. I mean,
if you're going to use them, use them.
Yeah, they really just set them up to send them off. And I don't know if that plays into, like, Guardians 3 is going to be them tracking down Gore, because if that's the case, then it really just doesn't make any sense that Adam Warlock is going to be in it. So I don't know if we get much of a continuation of that storyline for the Guardians. The pacing of the movie in general kind of just felt like you had to meet your marks. There weren't any big twists or turns. You know what I mean? It felt rushed to me. And I know that Taika came out and said, you know, I have 4 hours of a movie, right? That whole Taika cut. I feel like that was just said to cover up the fact that the movie doesn't hold up to the rest of the universe, and that maybe he is a little disappointed with the outcome. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like, you know, there were some storylines that I thought were super, super rushed. And the main one is Jane.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we first saw her in, you know, getting chemo for her breast cancer. And then it was just like, you know, they basically said there's nothing they can do. And then all of a sudden she looks at a book and goes, oh, yeah. And she goes to New Asgard and looks at the thing, and it starts moving, and boom, And next thing you know, she's Thor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I knew what was happening. I knew the trajectory of where it was going because of the comics, but not a lot of people did.
Yeah, I feel,
you know,
I feel like what they did with that was completely rushed. We didn't even see the initial transformation to Thor.
No.
Like
that, and I wanted to.
Exactly. That's a huge part in the comics. Like, that's a huge moment. It's like, that's a game changer. When Jane Foster becomes Thor in the comics, it's an absolute game changer. I remember the panel. It was brilliant. We were deprived that. We were denied that. And it was a little frustrating.
Yeah, when they're on the boat and she was talking about it, I thought they were going to do a flashback. Because, like, when he showed up in New Asgard and fighting, and then she comes in, and then he's like, oh, how'd you become Thor? And then, like, later, like I said, they're on the boat, on the Bifrost, and she was talking about, like, it called to me, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be the origin. And they didn't show it. And I'm like, okay, like, I get where they went, and then, like, if they would have showed that, I would have been happy. But it was just like, yeah, it called to me. And then, like, you know, later in the flashbacks, he kind of said, you know, he whispered to Mjolnir, you know, take care of her. And then the little symbol showed up, and it was kind of like, oh, that's why she became Thor.
Yeah, but that can't be the explanation. Like, that's not, so, that's so off of what really happened. And, like, I wish that we would have got what we got, like what we deserved. It feels like Kevin Feige said, don't make a 2-hour movie. Make this a standalone. Because this had the potential, like, with this storyline, introducing Gore, you know, you set up Eternity, you set up Zeus and the gods. There was so much exploration there that we just didn't get it. Like, the Jane stuff in general, as we continue talking about it, was forced, and it was very predictable. And it felt like we have to include this in the plot. We have to include this into a story. And albeit Natalie Portman crushed it as Thor, I thought she was a great
Thor. She did great. It wasn't her fault. It was the writing.
Yeah, the writing was forced. It was rushed. And, like, I think part of that, and I was talking to Dion about this, and I think part of it is that Taika Waititi has so many irons in the fire right now, either being produced or starring or being made, or it's already in distribution. He's got so many projects out there. I felt like this is the one that he should have focused on, and he was like, it's a Marvel movie, people are gonna see it. And of course people saw it. I mean, it opened to like $180 million. It did very well, but this was the one that you had to really focus on, because this is part of a larger plan. What we do in the shadows is good because of the actors and the actresses in it, right? The pirate show that he did was great because he was in it. Reservation Dogs, another project that he's, you know, producing. Star Wars, he's directing and writing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he's doing, but, like, you have to go back to our last episode, Stranger Things. You got to take kind of like the Duffer's approach and be like, this is really what gave you, like, made you a mainstream director. He was good before Ragnarok, but Ragnarok propelled him into stardom, essentially. And
it did.
At this point, I feel like he should have focused on Thor more. And maybe, listen, again, who are we, two guys sitting in rooms talking about it? There may have been a ton of notes. And that 4-hour cut, even though Taika Waititi does not like director's cuts, he thinks they suck. If that's out there, like, based on everything that's been said, planets were cut out, characters were cut out, and entire storylines were cut out. So maybe it was too smart for the production team at Marvel, and they were like, let's tone it down a little bit. This needs to be fun, not the follow-up to Doctor Strange, which was already kind of like a mind-bendy journey. This kind of felt like an Ant-Man movie, where it was just like a filler movie. You know what I mean? Like, Ant-Man is usually like filler. Let's continue talking about drop balls. Gore the God Butcher completely dropped the ball with him. Changed his origin story. Changed his look. Made him look like Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool, and X-Men Origins in the beginning.
I read why they changed it, and I understand it. They said doing a they did concept art and everything looked like Voldemort.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but there is concept art and comic book art where you can just throw tendrils on his face like he has, throw a badass hood on him, and he's not Voldemort, because he's not. Like, he's Gore the God Butcher. You give a better storyline than him in the desert, his daughter dies, and then he goes and kills the god because he's got the Necro Sword, which, again, that set it up. I was like, this is awesome. He's killing gods already. I feel like they totally dropped the ball with that. He's called the God Butcher, and we saw him kill one god. I wish that we would have been able to follow Gore on his journey to kill the gods. We talk about all these Marvel movies and how everybody gets a storyline. In Black Widow, Yelena got one. Red Guardian got one. Natasha got one. Everybody got one. In this one, Thor got one. Jane got one. Korg got one. That was it. The goats got more screen time than Gore.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they turned him into a child kidnapper. Killing gods is enough. You don't need to steal kids. And they just seem like a plot point. Like, oh, Heimdall has a kid now. And this bunny can shoot, lasers out its eyes. It was too wacky for a movie with Gore the God Butcher. Because, like, you're tracking down a intergalactic serial killer and his victims are gods. That's your story. That's all you need. You hunt them. You can go to Omnipotent City, right? Which was great. That was a fun little spot, right? Russell Crowe is a douchebag as Zeus, which kind of I think he feels like that in real life. They tease Hercules. Thor gets naked. He's got the Loki tattoo. They play on Chris Hemsworth's sexuality, like how sexy he is. And he gets the lightning bolt. Bing, bang, boom, you're done, right? That was it. Then you go and you hunt Gore. You don't need him stealing kids. And I don't like that they called him Shadow Monsters. They should have just called him Symbiotes, which was a little frustrating. But what I will say about Gore is every scene that he was in, Christian Bale dominated, showed why he's a world-class actor. And secondly, the Shadow Realm, when it went from color to that like grayscale, was brilliant and beautiful.
Great cinematography.
I loved the Shadow Realm. I thought that was great.
Yeah. As soon as I saw it, I said, ooh, okay. That's it. It kind of reminded me of a little better well done Sin City.
Yeah, it definitely has the Sin City vibes. Like, I like that there was like light undertones of like Thor's like red and blue on his suit and the silver. But what really stuck out to me was Gore's golden eyes. I thought that they were really cool. And, like, I'm curious, like, I want to see if you noticed this, but the fact that, like, Gore's eyes were gold as he was killing gods, right? And all of the gods' blood was gold. Do you think that it was, like, just a play on, like, he's becoming, like, the god of death through All Black?
I didn't think that.
Like, I'm not talking like he's Hades. But the fact that, like, he was getting darker and, like, paler, and then, like, the markings were getting more visible on him, and his eyes were changing colors, and they ended up being gold at the end. I thought that was very cool. And that could have just been to be like, hey, look, gold eyes look great on Shadow Realm. But, you know, was I happy Gore got his time to shine? Yes, but I feel like what Marvel does is they repeated their one-and-done villain trope.
Yeah.
And that was disappointing.
We were hoping Hela wasn't like that, and she was.
She came back, Melissa McCarthy. That was a great moment.
Yeah,
I was like, I will admit, like, Taika Waititi writes a funny movie. Like, I laughed a lot during this. I know Chelsea died whenever the goats were on there, and I know the goats were like a dividing factor for a lot of people, but they were fun. They're from the 70s in his comics, so you had to introduce them, but he writes a funny movie. Like, I did enjoy this movie a lot, and I, even though I'm bitching about it, I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I did too. There were definitely funny parts. It's just really, like I said, A lot of it seemed wasted potential.
Yeah, let's continue to talk about wasted potential. King Valkyrie. Non-existent in this movie. Really non-existent. Like, they gave her some cool fighting scenes, right? They let them know that she was bisexual, which I felt like was like a little bit of a, you know, their mission to add some more inclusivity into the universe, right? Korg's gay. Valkyrie's bisexual, so you have that now. You have your, you know, who else? Faustos in the Eternal. So like they're establishing their LGBTQ universe characters, which is great. You know, inclusion is amazing. But she's a king and she's a Valkyrie, and they all want to die. Like they're all saying, "We're gonna die. We're gonna go to Valhalla." She gets stabbed, and then she's put on the injured reserve. And I'm like, come on. Like, you got Tessa Thompson, who is a great actress. Utilize her. Like, don't make this like a girl's trip between her and Jane Foster where they're tapping their swords and they're playing Beyonce. Like, no. She is a badass warrior. And they didn't really give her the badass warrior treatment. So I was a little disappointed in that. I did like that Korg was the narrator. I got a little emotional when I thought he died.
Yeah, when he, like, you know, fell apart, I was like, no! I screamed it out loud.
Yeah, and then that was, and when Valkyrie got stabbed, I was like, oh, man, this is rough.
And then he was like, no, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm just a face now, bro. I'm a face. One of the biggest Easter eggs that I noticed and I was so pumped about was Daryl. Daryl Jacobson. Do you know who that is?
That was... the roommate or whatever.
Yes,
right?
From the Team Thor videos during Civil War. He is on New Asgard. And he had screen time, and Valkyrie was like, Daryl, where are you going? I thought that was great. Meek being like a sassy nurse or a sassy professor or secretary. I love it.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I just feel like it could have been a lot better. And I think part of that, there's two parts to it, right? So the first part is, I think I hyped myself up way too much for this movie.
And we normally do.
Yeah. Every time a Thor movie comes out, I want Beta Ray Bill. And every time a Thor movie comes out, I don't get Beta Ray Bill. I think that would have been the best moment for Beta Ray Bill to show up. But although I know the whole point, they kept saying someone's going to Valhalla. Somebody's going to Valhalla. So I knew we were going to see it. I knew somebody was going to die. And it makes sense to have Jane Foster do that so she's greeted by Heimdall in Valhalla. I thought that end credit scene was great. I thought it was nice to see Idris back. I thought that it was also nice to see Lady Sif back and alive. I thought that was cool. But I think Beta Ray Bill would have been the second best Thor to show up there. Like, I get why Jane Foster showed up, but it would have been nice to see Beta Ray show up because of his attachment to Stormbreaker in the comics, but it doesn't make sense in the movie because Stormbreaker is Groot's arm, blah blah blah. But it would have been cool if Beta Ray felt a disturbance in the Bifrost and made his way to Eternity. Which, what did you think of Eternity in this one?
First thing I thought was Galactus, which it wasn't.
No. There was,
but it,
there was a lot of Celestials in this, like Celestial heads in Eternity's like temple, I guess. There were Celestials at Omnipotent City. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people in the theater that I was at when they saw a large shrouded figure, they were like, "Oh, it's Galactus," and I'm like, they said Eternity in the beginning of the movie. So obviously Eternity is like the personification of time.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't Galactus. I thought it just looked like
him. Yeah. But they turned him into a wishing well. Did you like that they changed Eternity's whole story and powers?
No, because I don't know. It just kind of made it, they cheapened him, I think.
For sure, right? They cheapened him.
Yeah.
Like, This is also the second time in 2 years that we've seen the Living Tribunal's head. The Living Tribunal's head was in that temple on the wall, and we saw it in Loki. And at some point, the Living Tribunal needs to show up in, like, actual physical form. Maybe Guardians, maybe Thor 5 because he's returning. But there's a lot of potential moving forward, I believe. But what is going to happen moving forward? Right now, Thor's got a new sidekick. He's got his daughter.
Yeah.
His real, the Chris Hemsworth's real daughter.
Yes, but I knew that was his real daughter.
But he's got Gore's daughter now, and they are Love and Thunder. What did you think about that big reveal at the end?
Not what I thought Love and Thunder meant.
Right.
Didn't see it coming at all. At that part, I'm like, okay. Like, again, I just feel a lot of it, I just felt like it was cheap.
Yeah, it was a very 80s trope, and I think that that's what they were going for. You know, we talked about it before. It's a great moment for Chris and his daughter. I think that that's amazing. Oh, yeah. To get to share the screen. She's a superhero now. I didn't really like it, but the possibilities of a new physical embodiment of Eternity is pretty cool. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. If, you know, does she turn into Eternity and go away for a while? Does she join this, you know, Young Avengers that we keep talking about? Because everybody needs a sidekick, right? A little baby sidekick. Every show is getting a smaller sub-character. Thor didn't have that opportunity. They're not going to make Kid Thor, right? Because he doesn't have a kid. The only person he wants to have a kid with is now dead. They're not going to change the rhetoric and make him have a baby with Sif. So this kind of fits the future plans for like a kids kind of series. There was a lot of future building, I believe, that a lot of people are missing in general in terms of like the Hercules reveal. I think people are just like, oh, we got Hercules, but what's that mean? What did you think of Hercules showing up at the end of the movie?
Well, when they name dropped him, I said, okay, is he going to show up? And I was expecting a little more in an Independence City. Like, maybe, I was kind of hoping for like Crom, because I was like, okay, if they show Crom, maybe we'll get Conan. But we didn't.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for a lot more like recognizable gods in that universe, in Omnipotent City.
The cool thing was Korg's god.
Yep, that was cool.
Was sitting on a throne of scissors.
Yep.
Because we know rocks beat scissors. I thought that was funny.
That was fun. Do you think that Korg got too much screen time in this?
No. Korg can never get enough screen time.
I think he was in this a lot, though. He was. I will say that he was in this. I think Taika Waititi should have been second build in this, because I think he had more dialogue than any other character besides Thor.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's this movie, right?
But
and he's getting a series. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, it's rumored that they're working on a Korg series, probably, you know, Korg and Dwayne and their baby, and they're working on a second season of I Am Groot.
Okay, I haven't watched yet. Well, when does I Am Groot come out?
And next month, I think.
Okay. To go back to the Hercules thing, like, I like that they did it because it's a new character. Hercules is pretty cool in the comics.
Yep. Awesome in the comics.
Yeah. And let's talk about his look real quick. They got his look perfect, even though it's not hard. You know, green straps.
Yeah, but you can't really mess up that look, but you could. If you work for DC.
But he looked great. Like I said, I didn't recognize him because I don't watch Ted Lasso. But as soon as he came, like, as soon as they showed that end credit scene with Russell Crowe, I knew we were getting Hercules.
I thought so too. I was wondering if there was going to be somebody else, like, with Hercules, like a benefactor. But I don't think you need it, anybody else with Hercules. So I think that that was a great play. It sets up the Clash of the Gods. Like, that's exactly what we needed. We need somebody strong enough to take on Thor. And I think Hercules is that person, albeit he's a demigod. We know that. But he's so powerful. And they've fought before. They fought in Journey into Mystery Annual Number 1. They fought in Thor 126. They fought in Thor Blood Oath. So they have history. And I'm really looking forward to where they go with Hercules moving forward. Did you catch the statue in the Shadow Realm of Lady Death?
No.
Huge moment for me. I saw it and I was like, this is amazing. We all thought that we would never get Lady Death, right? And everybody kept saying, you know, there's no room for her. Not everybody, but like people in the know said that there's no room for Lady Death. And we get a statue of her, which shows that she exists, number one. And now it makes me think, like, damn, I really, really wish she was on Thanos' side during Infinity War and Endgame. That would have been so great. That would have been so great. But, you know, I like that we, you know, they recognize that she's alive. There was also a little bit of the Watcher in there. Did you check that out too?
No, I didn't see that.
So that whole place in the Shadow Realm, we got a bust, a giant bust of the Watcher, who we haven't seen Uatu in its, we haven't seen the Watcher other than, you know, What If, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we saw like a brief cameo of somebody who looks like Uatu, or Uatu in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 when Stan Lee was talking to him.
Yeah.
But we finally got confirmation that he was in this. We got the Living Tribunal and we got Lady Death. So those were three big characters. And leave it to Taika Waititi to put huge characters in statue form, because he did it in the Grandmaster's Palace too, with Beta Ray Bill, Ares, and Man-Thing.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a trend there. The big question that I have for you is, what was your favorite part of the movie? We've kind of ragged on this a little bit, but what was your favorite part?
Probably the part that got me like, whoa, was the Shadow Realm. That whole scene I thought was beautiful. That was probably the biggest scene that kind of like got me like not shook, but like, wow. I thought it was beautifully done. I liked everything they did inside the Shadow Realm. So that's probably my favorite part.
Yeah, I liked the Shadow Realm. I liked the battle on New Asgard. I thought that that was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
The end credit scene may be my favorite part, because just ramifications in the future.
Yeah.
Which we'll kind of talk about, like, the future for Thor in a minute. I did enjoy Omnipotent City. Because, like, I kind of feel like that's what those gods would be focused on. Orgies and grapes and shit like that. Like, not saving people. I think they did a really good job with that.
Super surprised they said orgy a bunch of times.
Well, they also showed Chris Hemsworth his ass.
Yeah. And then, like, they said orgy, and I looked over at my daughter, and she didn't flinch. And I'm like, oh, thank God she doesn't know what that is yet.
People know what – kids know what orgies are, Chuck. They're not having them, but they know what they are. That stuff's on, like, Bob's Burgers now. So, you know, leave it to Thor, to, you know, Disney and everything. Another thing that I really like is that throughout narration, like, if you haven't seen Thor, Korg recapped three Thor movies in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the fact that he showed the Warriors 3, I thought that that was cool. I thought that the fact that we got to see Darcy and Selvig again was great. So they brought back all the characters that, you know, you became attached with in the Thor series. But there was one thing that I'm still wondering and I'm still curious about, and that's the Necro Sword, aka All Black. So it appears in Thor God of Thunder number 6, right? We know it's carved from killing a celestial. It was created by the symbiote god Null, who I'm hoping that wasn't the dead god that we saw in the beginning of the movie when Gore got the sword, because I will be pissed if that was Null, because that, you know, we've talked about how important Null is.
Yeah.
But somehow, the Necro Sword wound up in London with Dane Whitman. So my question to you, this takes place in a, I don't think they've confirmed the timeline yet, but how the hell does a broken sword reattach itself? I know it's a symbiote, so maybe that's it. How does it attach itself and find its way to the Whitmans in London?
I don't know. Is this a set a little bit in the future? And, you know, the Whitman, I don't know. I thought I was confused with that, too.
If it's set in the future, then that, I don't care about the Black Knight anymore. I feel like this has to be set right after Endgame, right before Eternals, and it needs to be a living being. The sword has a symbiote, right? So maybe the sword isn't what we're worried about. Maybe it's the symbiote that's attached to it. So maybe the symbiote is the one from Far From Home, or No Way Home, or that Eddie leaves at the bar in Mexico with another Ted Lasso actor. Or maybe we haven't seen the last of that sword and it gets, you know, brought into London via the Eternals or via Captain Marvel and she gives it to somebody. I don't know. I'm very curious to see where they go with that. I really hope that they explain it, because, well, like, I'm a big geek when it comes to that stuff and I need to know. Like, I that's the one thing that I was hoping for, is the true rendition of the Necro Sword, which could lead to Null. And I'm very curious to see if that is to happen. So finally, as we kind of wrap this up before we get into our geek graders, what do you do with Thor moving forward? Do we go Thor 5? Because Hemsworth has come out and said, I want to do this as long as you want me to do this, which is something most core Avengers have not said.
Yeah, I mean,
most of them have already retired. So yeah. Hemsworth wants to get jacked and be enormous for the rest of his life. Do you go Thor 5?
I mean, I don't know else. Like, if he wants to be in it, where else are you going to put him? You know what I mean? I save Thor 5, especially with the Hercules.
Yep. Yeah, and they said he will return.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where will he return? If it's not Thor, you know what I mean?
Maybe a Thor miniseries?
I mean, it could be.
War, we could call it War of the Gods. Six-part yeah. miniseries, 6 hours, you're good to go?
I mean, you know, they will take big characters and give them their own series, so.
Yep, and they'll pay them movie money.
Yeah, that's not out of the realm, and I wouldn't be mad at that. Because honestly, some of the series, like, you're getting more screen time than a movie. You're getting, you know, they're 45 minutes. You're getting 6 episodes. You're looking at like 3.5-4 hours. So I don't hate that idea.
Okay, so let's say they skip that idea altogether and they go movie.
Okay.
Do you ride with Taika Waititi after this movie? Or do you go to a now fourth director of the Thor franchise?
I heard fans are petitioning to bring back Brana.
Oh, no.
I like Waititi. I think he's good for this. I'm a little less hopeful after this movie.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe this is a humbling experience for the folks at Marvel and saying, all right, maybe we need to rein it in a little bit more and we can't get super wacky with our characters. I think Taika has revitalized Thor.
I'm not saying he's 100%
ruined Thor. I know a lot of people are saying he's ruined Thor, and I'm not saying that at all. I think he revitalized a character that after two movies was dead in the waters. Nobody wanted a Thor 3, but they made it bright. They made it colorful. They made it funny. They made it a cinematic experience. I think he did the same thing with this one. Now, is it everybody's cup of tea? No. I read an article that said, if you love Ragnarok, you're going to like this one. And that speaks to me. I loved Ragnarok. I like this one. If you didn't like Ragnarok, you're probably not going to like this one, because maybe you don't really like Taika Waititi's sense of humor when it comes to Thor, but you like his sense of humor in Jojo Rabbit. I'd go Thor 5, War of the Gods, make it serious as Taika can, with it, while including his, you know, his banter. I don't think it should just be Thor versus Hercules. I think you introduce more gods. And I'd like Hercules to have a team to go after Thor, and I would like Thor to build a team to, you know, after he finds out that Hercules is going to try to kill him, and that team consists of Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, that's the only character I need to see in Beta Ray, in a Thor movie, is Beta Ray Bill. That's it. I don't care who else shows up. They can, honestly, if Beta Ray Bill doesn't show up, the only other character I would want is Angela.
Okay.
Which, kind of tough, because she's Marvel / Image owned, so there's a lot of legal paperwork you got to go there, and you got to get Todd McFarlane to sign off on stuff. But if they bring in Angela, that would be great. Maybe Angela works with Hercules to go after Thor. Yeah, because Sif's not going to help. She's got one arm. Unless she gets a Wakandan Winter Soldier arm. Korg is, you know, he's got a baby with Dwayne now. So he's a father. He can't go out there. And I don't think Love and Thunder is the team that beats Hercules.
No.
So you need Beta Ray Bill. So I say bring Beta Ray Bill in. And finally, I think they should bring back the Grandmaster.
I kind of thought he was going to show up in here.
He was supposed to be in there, and they cut him.
Okay.
Now, were you surprised that we didn't see a Loki variant besides Matt Damon?
No, I didn't. I didn't expect to see him.
Did you like Thor's tribute to him on the tattoo?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. That whole scene was pretty funny. You flick too hard. I feel like, you know, we've never said this about a Marvel movie except for Doctor Strange, but this suffered from trailer treatment. Got too many trailers.
Yeah.
All the good parts I think I saw in the trailers. And also, you know, we were talking about this before we jumped on. I think Phase 4 is kind of starting off on a rocky road.
Yeah. Kevin Feige did say in the next couple months we're going to know what the big threat is. So okay. I think maybe that's when it gets ramped up. But as of right now, nothing seems to mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, everything's kind of just standalone. You know, whether it's TV, nothing's connecting the TV to the movies at this point, other than the opening crawl, where you get to see Moon Knight and Kamala. You know, Khonshu wasn't at the Omnipotent City, which would have been cool. You know, none of the gods that Kamala worships were there, so that doesn't connect. I think that the villain is Kang. I would imagine the big threat is Kang, but
I would think so.
But which version of Kang? You know, are we going to get the very first version, Immortus in Black Panther? You know, because that's the next movie. That's November. Yeah. Comes out, and that's another one that, like, we haven't seen anything.
No, they haven't showed
anything. They keep it under wraps. And all that we know is that Namor is going to be in it, and Ironheart's going to debut. So there's a lot of what-ifs, no pun intended, in the Marvel Universe. So a part of me is super curious and intrigued about this because, like, this has been a well-oiled machine, and it's been very methodical, and like we knew what was coming, X, Y, and Z. And the fact that we're left in the dark on this, I'm pretty excited for. But then it gives me anxiety because, like, did you get too big for yourself? Did you smell yourself too much? And do you think just because it's Marvel, people are going to come see your movies? Because a lot of people are going to go see this movie, and it's going to keep the Thor franchise running, which I'm happy about. But are you getting genuine reviews from people? And are people honest when they say this was a bad movie? I don't know. All right, so let's geek grade this. I'm very curious to see where you go with this. 1 through 10, where are you at?
7.9.
Wow, okay. You're higher than me.
Really?
Yeah, I'm at 7.5.
Okay. We're not far away.
No, but you're in like the close to 80%, so you're right there with the fan score.
Yeah, I think I gave it high because I had fun.
Yeah, I think I gave it low because it didn't feel connected. And no, maybe in a few months we'll be like, oh, okay. And we'll revisit Thor when it goes back on Disney Plus, and we could probably change our picks. But right now, I'm going to stick with 7.5.
And I'm sticking with 7.9.
As you should. Be a man of your word. But that's it, dude. I mean, we could potentially be called Love and Thunder. You're like a small child to me. But we're going to get out of here. Next week, we're back and we're going to talk Marvel. Because we're going to talk about Ms. Marvel. Because that's wrapping up. And a lot of people have thoughts on it.
I do.
Yeah, and you guys and gals, anybody listening, are going to hear two 30-plus-year-old men talk about a show centered around a 16-year-old Pakistani girl from Jersey City. So get ready for that, because we're definitely not the target audience for that show.
No, but not at all.
But we have our thoughts, so catch up on Ms. Marvel if you already haven't, or if you haven't already. And we'll be back next week, so follow us on social media, The Active Geek Podcast, follow Galaxy Wars and Gym Class, follow Chuck on Instagram, Chuck_TheActiveGeek, and follow AG Cosplay, our resident cosplayer. And yeah, that's it. Ms. Marvel next week. We're going to talk a lot about Jersey. I feel it's going to be a very Jersey Shore type episode. How many times we say cabs here? I'm not sure. You'll just have to tune in next week. But that's it, man. For the Active Geek Podcast, I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.